Well, let me add my very positive sense of the discussion here, and I particularly like the fact that we don't all necessarily agree with each other. It seems to me that that's what human progress is all about, and World Watch is really a platform for discussion, for ideas, and we use State of the World in that way to get ideas going. We obviously take our best shot analytically at understanding what's going on in the world, but we certainly recognize that neither we nor anyone else at any given moment in time has all of the answers. And the kind of discussion and dialogue we see here today is extremely important, and I'm particularly appreciative that we have some real authorities based here in the Netherlands joining us today to discuss these issues, which I might add is a pattern that we've been following in similar symposia and roundtables that we have been holding and will continue to hold all around the world in this year. Let me also just limit myself to a couple of response. We always tend to respond to the points we disagree with and not to echo all of the things we agree with. So, and let me start by saying I agree with 90% of what I heard, but let me respond to a couple of points. Just quickly to add on to Michael's comment on agriculture, I'm also no agricultural expert, and it would have been wonderful to have Brian Hallweil here today, who really is one of the world's global experts on sustainable agriculture and how we move forward. We do not take a Malthusian perspective, and we do think that it is possible to meet food needs in a sustainable way. We also think a very different model of agriculture is going to need to come into place. I think the one sort of comment I would react to is this idea, again, of intensification. I think clearly we need intensification of agriculture, if by that you mean improved water efficiency. I mean, clearly agriculture is water resource constrained in major parts of the world, particularly because these wonderful Green Revolution crops that we've developed over recent decades gulp huge amounts of water. And so we're going to have to use water very, very efficiently. And in some sense, that means intensification. There also is going to be intensification because of the fact that increasingly we're going to require that our agricultural lands deliver energy resources to replace oil in particular, as well as food. That is going to demand intensification. I would argue that particularly in the poor developing countries, a lot of this intensification should be labor intensive. We need to utilize the labor that's available in a very efficient way to employ people on the farm. And I don't think that it means becoming dependent on distant imports of chemicals and energy to intensify agriculture. I think that to some limited extent may work in some circumstances, but I think particularly in an era of rising oil prices, rising chemical prices, as well as the kind of long-term ecological damage that comes from chemical-intensive agriculture, would put the livelihoods of hundreds of millions of people at risk. So let's intensify, but let's be careful about developing a new sustainable model of agriculture that is focused on meeting people's needs. The things, certainly there may be some role for genetically modified crops, but the thing that we find disturbing is this 90% of the debate about agricultural technology is now about genetically modified crops, most of which have been proposed are going to only benefit rich people in industrial countries and do relatively little for meeting the food needs in poor countries. That, we think, is distorted. And again, let's talk about the right kind of intensification and a truly sustainable model of agriculture. On energy, I think we agree on most things. I've said very clearly that I think we should examine all options. All options are on the table. They should be on the table. And let me just make a very specific, and perhaps slightly controversial point. And it's probably one that many would not expect us to make. Clearly, we have our own, vision of how the energy system could develop. I think that ultimately, if you just look at the trends underway in terms of the way costs are coming down, markets are blossoming, that there is just this enormous untapped potential for a highly efficient, renewable, resource-based energy system. But I also think that ultimately that's only going to work if it makes sense in the marketplace. It's not, I think we're long past the point where a set of government planners or, you know, international planners at the UN are going to come up with the energy system of the future. I also have relatively little confidence in government R&D. Government R&D is not going to make renewables work. It's not going to make nuclear work. It's not going to make carbon sequestration work. All of those things are going to have to stand or fall in the marketplace. And the thing that fundamentally makes me personally convinced, even while I want to keep all these other options on the table and allow them to be looked at and invested in, that we're going the renewables direction, is because I look at trends in the marketplace. These markets are for solar, wind, bioenergy are growing at 20 to 30% a year. They're already a $25 billion a year market. And the reason they're growing is not government R&D. It's because governments are getting barriers out of the marketplace. They're allowing these energy sources to compete. They're allowing venture capital to pour in and to make the technologies work. And I think if you see a larger number of countries do what Germany has already done, what Denmark has already done, what Spain has already done, what some states both in India and the United States have already done, what Japan has already done in some sector, what China and Brazil are just beginning to do, which is to change the market structures to allow these new technologies to compete with the fossil fuels, with nuclear, I think you're going to change the world. I mean, already these countries that I've mentioned have created huge markets, which have already created over 100,000 jobs in total, have already displaced significant amounts of fossil fuels. I think we're right on the edge of an energy revolution where things can and will change a lot faster than anyone expects. And all that is really required to do that is for a continuing series of countries to adopt the kinds of market reforms that have already worked in some countries. And clearly, they'll have to be adapted and somewhat different in different countries. But, I mean, I've met with three Chinese delegations now who are literally traveling the globe. They know what the German energy laws look like. They know what the Japanese law looks like. They know what we're doing in California. And they are adapting those to a Chinese context. Because ultimately, what China understands is China has a lot more wind than it has oil. And ultimately, it actually has more solar energy than it has coal. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that. But ultimately, what China has, which is the strategic advantage in renewable energy, is it has the human resource base. It has highly skilled and also relatively low-cost labor, and these are manufactured technologies. And just as China sets the price today for everything from computers to refrigerators, I'm convinced within 5 to 10 years they're going to do the same with renewables, which will drive down the cost and make these technologies available to a much broader cross-section of the world. Let's let everything compete. But I think that if you want to know strategically where the world is going, you have to study these high-growth industries and understand the dynamics that are at work. And I think by understanding that, it provides an optimism and a confidence that we'll need in order to make that next step forward.